Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
This podcast is for mature audiences. It contains graphic violence and adult themes. Listener discretion is advised.
Realm presents Blood and Gold, starring Richard Cabral, Episode 6.
Winter brought the rain, and lots of it. Rivers in the southern reaches flowed faster than ever, creating boom times for the miners there. I briefly considered heading there myself, trying my luck again. Jesus was making out all right at Murphy's Diggings, and Tres Dedos had joined him there. But I couldn't face that. Not just the labor involved, but the ever-present reminder of what I once had, with Rosita by my side. It would hurt too much. Instead, I holed up in my bare mountain cave. I read and reread articles about myself in the El Dorado Republican, and other newspapers from the area. The man in the newspapers was a murderer and a thief. Crimes I had never imagined had been laid at my feet. Robberies, assaults, rapes, and more. Anything that couldn't be explained was blamed on the Mexican murderer with long, dark hair, a mustache, and a scarred forehead. A few papers contained sketches, none of which looked exactly like me, but some of which came close. Once the snow eased up, I visited with Jesus and Tres Dedos and made brief trips into various towns, picking up supplies and assessing my own safety. While shopping at Murphy's Diggings, I heard a familiar voice call out.
Joaquin, goddammit, as I live and breathe, it's you.
Bill Burns walked toward me, arms out in greeting, a broad smile splitting his craggy face. He looked older than I remembered, but still, I had no Burns anywhere.
Bill, I can't believe you're here. I can't believe you all. As for me, Murphy's one of the richest camps around. Seemed like the right place to be. For what? Mining? Tried that. Didn't agree with me. Nah, I better ways to make money. And they don't involve breaking my damn back.
Like what?
Let's you and me get a drink and talk about it, Joaquin. Shit, we got a lot to catch up on, huh, don't we? When did you get to California? How fares Rosa?
At the mention of Rosita, my face betrayed me. Burton saw it.
Oh no. What happened? I'll tell you about it, Bill, but only over those drinks.
Inside a quiet saloon, I told Burns as much of my story as I dared, leaving out my mission of vengeance against those who killed her. I described the night we ran away, the wedding at gunpoint, the early days on the river, and Burns nodded along, listening eagerly. When I got to the attack, Burns' face clouded over. Those men should hang. It should tell the authorities. A Mexican's word against that of five white men. And you're probably right, goddammit. Still, there ought to be something done.
It's been done, Bill.
What do you mean? They were arrested? Turned themselves in?
I can't say any more than that. Byrne studied me over his glass.
It can't be. You're the Mexican murderer?
Shh, Bill.
God, you whore. God damn you, Joaquin. You're him.
Bill, don't get carried away. I'm the Joaquin you've always known. That's all. I've known tragedy. But I'm still him.
Now you different. I can see it. I'm older. So are you.
Well, thanks for pointing that out.
But no, it's more than that. You're harder. Listen, Bill, I don't care who you kill. Those men were animals who needed to die. As far as I'm concerned, it's not murder. It's justice.
That's how I looked at it. And I'm done with it now. I'm looking to find some honest employment somewhere.
You had enough of mining?
I have. Jesus and Manuel are still at it, but it's not the life for me.
Trust me, it's hard on a white man, too.
I turned up a handful of nice-sized nuggets, some flakes, but never enough to live on for any length of time. I mean to use what I got to set myself up in my own business. But it turns out I'm a few hundred dollars shy. I could use a partner. A business.
Doing what?
Men with money in their pockets get awful thirsty. I was thinking about opening up a small drinking establishment in Murphy's Diggins. You know what I mean? Nothing gaudy. Just a quiet, friendly place where folks can come and drink with friends.
What kind of partner are you looking for?
I'd want a game of chance to strip away the rest of the gold they're carrying. You think you could run a Monte game?
I could try.
Like I said, I'm a few hundred dollars shy. Can you make up the difference?
My pockets are as empty as a man who spent all night at your establishment.
Could he borrow from your brother? Or you got something you could sell?
I ran through a mental list of my worldly possessions.
I could sell a horse. And if it's a good horse, it'll bring a couple hundred, maybe more.
Still a little shy.
How long until we start making money?
A few weeks, maybe.
Could be less,
but no more than that.
Then if I sold two horses, I could buy one of them back, or a new one, fairly quickly. They're good ones, from Rosita's father's ranch.
They're Felix horses?
You could get top dollar for those. That'd be enough to put us over the top.
I'm sure. I guess I'm in then.
Burns extended a hand, and I shook it.
Partners.
I received fair prices for both horses and put the entire proceeds into a pot with Burns' money. We acquired the premises Burns had in mind, a space big enough for a bar and a dozen tables, one of which I appropriated for my Monte games. I quickly developed the skill to pick up and drop the cards so swiftly that it was almost impossible to follow the Red Queen. But some men hated to be wrong, and because I was Mexican, they often didn't bother with my name, but called me Pancho, Greaser, or worse. Those men were invited to leave the premises and not return. 6 days before Christmas, Jesus and Tres Dedos rode in with a mule I had never seen trailing behind their horses.
I'm leaving the mule for you, little brother, because you said you wanted to visit some friends in Cayuma.
Yes, the Mendozas. They've helped me out when I was in some trouble. I want to take them a gift for Christmas.
You'll go tomorrow.
I will, and I'll return on Christmas Day.
I'll come back that afternoon to collect the mule then. I just bought her. She's fine for riding, but I mainly bought her to work at the diggings. She's a good hauler, I'm told.
Thank you, Jesus.
You're a good brother. I'm glad we're still near enough to see each other sometimes.
As am I.
Stay out of trouble, Joaquin. We'll see you soon.
The next day, I packed some fruits and nuts and other gifts I'd acquired onto the mule Jesus had loaned me and headed out of town. I had only made it as far as Murphy's old diggings when a man I vaguely recognized called out to me. He wore a scowl, like he'd been born with it.
You there! Ain't you walking?
I reined the mule in. I am. I know you.
You ought to. You took enough of my money at your monte table.
You're Mr. Lang.
Will Lang. That's right.
Something I could do for you, Mr. Lang. I have a long ride ahead of me, and it's mighty cold out here.
A long ride on my mule? What the hell you doing with that animal?
It's my brother's mule. He bought it.
The hell he did? The beast was stolen from me 3 days back.
My brother is an honest man. He's a miner. He bought the mule to haul things for him.
A mule instead of a burro. Hell of a tale. You got any more like it?
Sir, I'm telling you, my brother bought this mule when...
Lang crossed the distance between us, his hands balled into fists. He pointed to the animal's right ear, where I saw a notch I hadn't noticed before.
Well, he might have did, but I ain't sold it. You see that? She cut down some barbed wire, reaching under it for some better grass. I got a little spread off that old Murphy's road, and I can show you the section of fence she cut it on. She got a scar on her muzzle there too.
Mr. Lang, there's some misunderstanding. I don't know who Jesus bought it from, but he did buy it. And I'm certain he had no idea it had been stolen.
I could peg you for a horse thief right now.
He was right. People had started to come out of homes and businesses, curious about the altercation on the quiet main street. They were almost exclusively white people. A Mexican accused of stealing horses wouldn't stand a chance in their company. How could I get out of this mess?
You could, but it wouldn't be true.
You know who I am, where I work. I'm partners with Bill Burns in that place. I wouldn't risk my livelihood and my neck by stealing a mule.
You might not, but I wouldn't know your brother from General Santa Ana himself.
Look, let's meet at Murphy's tomorrow at noon.
I'll get Jesus there and we'll get this all straightened out. I'm sure it's just some kind of mistake. Noon? I'll be there. And I'll bring my mule.
I no longer carried a gun with me everywhere, but I was never without my knife. I put my hand on the pommel.
I'll bring the mule.
Lang read the look on my face. He nodded reluctantly.
All right. You be there. I know where to find you if you're not.
That's true. I'm not hiding.
Noon then.
Lang walked away without looking back. I fought a sudden impulse to charge after him and bury the knife in his back. But I couldn't. Not only were there plenty of people around, but I was done with that life. I was an honest man now. Disputes had to be settled with words, not violence. My trip to Cayuma was over. I couldn't get back in there in a day. And I had to fetch Jesus to let him know what had transpired over the mule. Perhaps he had a bill of sale, or maybe Tres Dedos had witnessed the transaction. Anything to quiet Lang's complaints. I was no innocent. I'd murdered people and robbed them after. Stealing livestock, though? That I had never done. It was one thing to live with one's crimes. It was another thing entirely to be accused of crimes I never even contemplated. I swallowed my rage and turned the mule around.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
The sun was high. Tres Dedos, Jesus, and I stood outside Beyond Mind's establishment with the mule hitched to a post in front of the door. We'd been there for about 15 minutes when Will Lang stepped out of a saloon down the street, accompanied by half a dozen white men. My anger at Lang's accusation had only grown overnight. I was beginning to think you weren't coming. I'd be damned if I wouldn't show up to claim my own property. Jesus was angry too. The mule is mine, and you know it. You sold it to me yourself and took my money. Ha! You got anything on paper to back that up? You didn't give me anything. Tres Dedos took a half step toward Lang. The mule's not stolen, and you know it. I was there. You fellas, take a look. Check that cut on that ear and the scar on her face. Whose mule was that? The other men gathered around, inspecting the animal.
That's your mule, Will. I know it anyway.
The others offered their agreement. Jesus was seething. I don't know any of you men. None of you were there when he sold it to me. And where exactly did that take place? On the road between here and Cuyuma, where I met you. You were on a horse and leading the mule. And I stopped you and I said I was looking for one. And would you ever sell it? You asked me to name a price. And I did. You raised me and we settled in the middle.
Lie. You a liar and a horse thief.
I am not. Fellas, fetch some rope. This thief's got to hang. Wait, I shouted. Surely this can be settled some other way. I didn't steal the mule. Jesus insisted.
I paid for it.
The man who identified the mule spoke again. He was big, with close-cropped blonde hair and strangely flat face. I stared at him. I'd seen that man before.
Will says you did it. I say he did.
Tres Dedos shouted. He whipped out a big knife from somewhere. A couple of the men dashed back into the saloon from which they emerged. Jesus had had enough.
I won't be treated this way. I am taking my mule and going home.
Lang stepped between him and the mule, drawing a pistol from behind his back. He came forward and grabbed Jesus by the wrist. I reached for my knife, but three other men swarmed me, one locking his arms around mine, another snatching the knife from my sash. The third waved a gun in my face.
You just settle down, mister. We're awful sick of you fucking greasers coming here and stealing our stock. You try anything, you get the same treatment as your friend.
He's my brother, and he's a better man than all of you put together.
Five men grabbed Tres Dedos, two of them hanging onto his knife arm. He surged toward Lang anyway, dragging the men along. Before he could reach his target, two more men joined the fray. One of them slammed a thick wooden club into the back of Tres Dedos' head several times, blood flying each time it was drawn back. Tres Dedos wrenched his arm free with a roar and lashed out with a knife, slicing into the men holding him. The club came down again and again. Eyes wild, Tres Dedos went to his knees. The men around him kicked and punched, and the club struck again and again and again. Tres Dedos slumped forward and fell on his face in the dirt, blood pooling around him. The two men who got into the saloon emerged with a length of rope already tied into a noose at one end. So this had been the plan from the start. I struggled against those holding me, but they were strong, and the one with the pistol slashed it across my cheek. I tasted blood. Jesus struggled too, but more white men poured out of nearby buildings. What had been a small group was turning into a mob. They pinned Jesus in place and looped the noose around his neck, then dragged him toward a sturdy live oak at the end of the road. I screamed at them to stop, but any time I did, someone punched me in the kidneys or kicked at my knees and shins. The man with the gun pistol whipped me again for good measure. Then the door to our saloon opened, and Burns came out, accompanied by two other men. One of them, a regular named Ray McPhee, owned the town's butcher shop and served as a constable on the side. The other, Sam Green, was a rival saloon keeper, but a longtime friend of Burns. McPhee spoke first.
Hey, what's going on, boys?
Never you mind, Ben, Lang said. We're just fixing to stretch some hemp. These greasers is horse thieves. Joaquin's my partner.
Burns protested.
You all know him? He's as honest as the day is long. He's in league with these others. They stole my mule and tried to deny it. He did nothing of the sort. Joaquin, I thought you was in Cuyuma.
I tried to answer, but one of the men has such a tight grip on my throat that I couldn't get a word out.
Turn them loose,
Burns demanded.
Look, I'll lock this pair up in jail,
McPhee offered.
When Sheriff Annan gets back, he'll straighten this all out. If these men are thieves, they're entitled to a trial. They've been tried and convicted,
Lang said.
By us. The goddamn lousy Mexicans. Why involve the law? You men will stay out of our way if you value your own hides. We'll do nothing of the kind,
Burns said. He started back toward the bar, where I knew he kept a shotgun in case of trouble. But before he made it two steps, one of the men from the mob drew a pistol and fired. The top of Burns' head blew off in a pink mist, and he dropped to the road. The man with the gun pointed it at the other two.
Either of you feeling brave? White man takes a greaser side. He gets what he deserves.
McPhee went to his knees beside Burns. Sam Green just stood there, arms at his sides, fury twisting his face. Tears sprang to my eyes. Rage and sorrow flooded through me in an equal measure. as if the scent of blood had driven the mob over the edge. A roar went up, and Jesus and I were dragged down the road. Curses popped around like firecrackers. I jerked one arm free, then planted a booted foot and turned on my nearest captor, throwing a fist that split open the flesh below the man's eye. I clawed at another man before two others grabbed the free arm and wrenched it behind my back, shoving my face into the muddy road. They dragged me along then, face down, kicking me as they went. At the oak tree, I was hauled to my feet and caught a glimpse of my brother. The noose had been tightened around his throat and his hands bound behind his back. His face was bloodied, his eyes wild with terror. The big man who had been with Lang from the start took the loose end of the rope and hurled it skyward. As he did, I finally remember who it was. The deputy from Los Angeles who had made Rosita and I pay for the foreign miners' tax. What was his name again? Schmidt. The rope flew over the branch, dropping down on the other side. An ugly cheer went up from the mob. A dozen of them wrestled for position on the loose end, and the victors set tugging on it. Jesus gave a choked cry, and he was yanked off his feet. He started kicking every which way. I tried again to break free of my captors, to rush my brother's rescue. It earned me only more beatings. When they dragged me to my feet again, I could hardly stand on my own. But the grips of the men holding me kept me upright. Jesus rose above the crowd, still kicking. The men stopped pulling him and tied the rope to the tree's trunk. Jesus dangled there, unable to reach the noose around his neck, unable to do anything but kick and writhe from side to side. His eyes bulged. His mouth worked, but nothing came out except guttural sounds. Finally, it stayed open, his tongue lolling out, and the kicking stopped. Jesus swayed gently, turning slowly when a cold breeze blew out of the east. Then, Lang pointed at me.
Now, this one.
But with the death of Jesus, the vigor seemed to have drained from the mob. Sensing that there was no more spirit left for another hanging, Lang settled for a second best. While Schmidt cut off a length of the hanging rope, others stripped off my shirt. They pressed me up against the oak's trunk with my bare chest against the bark and tied my wrists together on the other side. Somebody procured a whip for Lang, who began lashing my back. The first few blows knocked the wind out of me. And just as I regained it, the next landed, and the next. After the first six or seven, my back on fire, blood rolling down my back and into my trousers, I hardly noticed the remaining blows. Hatred and rage supplanted all else. Sometime later, a Mexican man, older, with white streak in his beard, scooped water from a pail in a dented tin cup and offered it to me. Someone had cut me loose from the tree, though I didn't remember it. I had been lying beside it in a daze for what must have been an hour or more. When the man bent over beside me and sloshed the cup in the pail, I blinked and returned to the present, becoming aware again of the agony that started at my back but swelled to engulf every part of my being. I tried to sit up, couldn't. The man dropped the cup back into the pail and took my arm, helping me sit. Every motion sent another lance of pain through me. I opened my mouth and let the stranger pour some water on my tongue.
Lo conozco.
No, I have seen you before in town. My name is Bernardo. I saw what they did to you. At that, I looked up. Jesus still dangled there, twisting slightly on the rope. And to him, Bernardo added, "Mi hermano, Jesus, help me get him down. Amigo, you're in no condition to
help me, or I'll do it myself.
I will help you, but let me do the hard work. You're hurt badly.
You're an old man. I can do it."
I grasped my sash, looking for my knife, but it was gone, taken by the mob. Bernardo produced a knife from a pocket and handed it to me. Lo podemos hacer juntos. You cut the rope, and I'll hold it. Together, we lowered Jesus to the ground. I need to bury him. You need a doctor. You're injured. I'll be fine. ¿Me puede ayudar? Bury him. Where? The church here won't take a hangman.
Not here. Where the whites can spit on his grave. I'll take him out into the wilderness. Find a good spot.
It's winter, Bernardo reminded me. The ground is hard as stone. What do you suggest?
Leave him until spring? He needs to be buried.
Let me help.
Do you have shovels and horses?
I have little, mi amigo. But I can get them.
Do it. I'll reward you.
With what? No reward is needed. We are all strangers here, in a place where we're unwelcome. If we don't help each other, who will?
With what?
The question drove home my situation. I had little money, but not much. I had my interest in our saloon, but Burns was dead. Tres Dedos too, most likely. I peered down the street, but saw no sign of Burns' corpse or my cousin's. By now, Lang and his friends had probably stripped everything of value from the bar and burned it to the ground. I couldn't risk seeing those men again. I would have to kill anyone I saw who had been part of the mob. But in my weakened state, I would most likely be killed instead. No, I had to recover and come back when I was stronger. Then, I would kill them all. Bernardo borrowed two horses and a shovel, and together we rode into the hills. I found a spot on a south-facing slope so Jesus could look toward Mexico, and we took turns digging into the frozen earth until we had a hole deep enough to accommodate the body. As the sunset washed the sky, Bernardo said a few words over the grave. I hadn't spoken for hours. I was empty, stripped of everything but skin and bones and pain. Bernardo spoke gently. "Will you be all right, mi amigo? Let me have one of those horses."
"I cannot. The horses are borrowed. Otherwise, I would.
But they are not mine to give. I'll repay you and the owner tenfold."
"Forgive me, but you do not look like a man with that kind of wealth."
"I will have it. My name is Joaquin Murrieta. This will not be the last you hear of me. I owe you, and I always repay my debts, the friendly kind, as well as the other. I started with Will Lang. Lang had been the instigator. He'd taken good money for the mill, then had accused Jesus of stealing it. If not for his lies, I would still be partners with Bill Burns, and he and Jesus would still be alive. With the horse I'd taken from Bernardo, I rode down from Bear Mountain, where I'd gone to heal. The snow had melted, and signs of spring were everywhere. Close to town, small farms and ranches and a few mining claims lined the road, and I watched out for Lang's little spread. It took days to spot Lang, but finally I did, on a Sunday morning, riding a buggy home from church, dressed in what must have been his best suit. It was brown mostly, with patches of almost brown in the worn through spots. The mule pulling the buggy had a notch on its right ear. I stayed just close enough to see where Lang went. His little spread turned out to be simply a wooden house with a small yard surrounded by barbed wire fence. Behind the house were two shaded stalls, open to the elements. A horse stood in one, and Lang put the mule in the other when he unhitched her from the buggy. I gave him a few minutes to get inside, get settled. I had no weapons. I left my musket and pistol in the hotel room the day I'd been whipped, and I had never gone back for them. The knife I had bought in Los Angeles had been stolen, but I wouldn't need weapons for Lang. When I kicked in the front door, Lang was sitting at a simple wooden table with a steel flask in front of him, the lid unscrewed and set beside the bottle. He looked up at me.
I wonder when you show up.
I hope it's been disturbing your rest.
Not really. This helps.
Take another swig then. It'll be your last. Lang tilted his head toward a rifle hanging from two pegs hammered into the wall.
I have a gun.
Why not go for it?
I figure there's not much use in it.
Do you want to die?
It ain't a matter of wanting it or not. It's a matter of practicality. I done plenty of bad in my time, and not so much good as I might have. I ain't got no people to worry about, and no fortune either. You tell me, is living so much better than dying?
You're a sad man.
And you're not.
I pressed my lips together until they turned white, but I didn't answer. Instead, I snatched the rifle off the wall. Ammunition.
Box on the little table by the door.
I hope you live a long time. And I hope every day is more miserable than the one before. Taking the gun and the bullets, I went out the door, leaving it open behind me. To be Will Lang alive was worse punishment than dying. I took his horse and the mule, then climbed back onto my horse and headed for Cuyuma to sell Lang's animals. My brother had been hanged from a crime that hadn't been committed, but it was never too late. With the proceeds from the sale of Lang's livestock, I was able to purchase a new Colt Dragoon to to replace the one I lost, and a new Bowie knife with a 9-inch blade. I also bought some clothes and boots, all in black, including an American hat with a wide brim. As a nod to my heritage, I had a seamstress sew ornate silver conchos along the outer seam of each pant leg, and I kept my red sash around my waist. I was beginning to look the part I intended to play, but more was needed. A plan formed in my mind. I rode to Hangtown to see the barber I had met before. The shop was empty, as it had been on my previous visit. The barber was sitting in his chair, carving away at a chunk of pine. He looked up when I entered.
It's you. You remember me. You're hard to forget.
You did me a favor before. I appreciate it.
You need another haircut.
The barber stood, set down the wood and the knife, and motioned me into the chair. And a shave. But I also need information. You seem to know a lot about our fellow Mexicanos in the area.
What kind of information?
I need to find some men who aren't afraid of a little danger. Men who can help me make some money.
Digging?
I'm not trying to take gold from the ground anymore. I'll let the others do that. Then take it from them. The barber began cutting big chunks of hair.
I might know somebody like that.
You might. Have you heard of Salomon Pico?
Of course.
Everyone heard of Pico. His cousin, Pio Pico, had been governor of Alta California before the war. After the war, Salomon had started raiding in newly American California, amassing a good-sized gang.
I know a man who knows some men who used to ride with them. They've become, let's say, disheartened. What I hear is that they think he takes unnecessary chances. He will either be arrested or killed soon, they say.
So they're looking for another situation.
I'm only saying what I've heard.
Can you put me in touch with them? The barber made a few more cuts, then ran his fingers through my hair, inspecting his work.
Perhaps? Are you somebody who has something to offer?
I could be.
Tell me your name again.
I am Joaquin Murrieta. Never heard of you. Have you, perhaps, heard of the Mexican murderer?
That was you?
It was. Those were personal, though. From now on, it's not personal.
What is it, then?
I considered my answer for a moment. It's my mission in life.
That's quite ambitious.
It is indeed. The barber walked to the door, looked out, then returned to my side. He leaned in close to my ear and began speaking quietly. The man you want to see is named Garcia.
You're listening to Blood and Gold, starring Richard Cabral. Blood and Gold is a Realm production in association with Stryker Entertainment. Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world. That ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Blood and Gold stars Richard Cabral, based on the novel Blood and Gold, The Legend of Joaquin Murrieta,
by Jeffrey J. Marriott and Peter Murrieta. Produced by Marco Palmieri, Fred Greenhalgh, Kaylin West, and Haley Wagreich. Adapted for audio by Greg Cox. Directed by Fred Greenhalgh. Executive produced by Molly Barton, Marcy Wiseman, Russell Binder, Peter Murrieta, Julian Yap, and Richard Cabral. Historical notes read by Elena Ray. Spanish dialogue translated by Alana Graham. Regional dialect coaching by Luis Armando Mercado Campos. Sound design by Eric Mooney. Mixing, mastering, and additional sound design by Rory O'Shea. Audio editing by Corey Barton. Original score by Juan Carlos Enriquez. Music supervision by Marcus Bagala. Production manager, Alexis Latshaw. Production coordinator, Angela Yee. Casting by Sunday Bowling and Meg Mormon. Cover art by Kendall Thomas. Executive in charge for Realm, Mary Asadolahi. Find more shows like Blood and Gold by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm.